And don't forget to follow us on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook, and hopefully YouTube when I get it up and running. Remember, it's at Trivial It on Twitter, capital T, capital I, no spaces, all one word, Trivial It. Now that that's out of the way, let's talk about today's topic. So if you remember last week, we were talking about the seven wonders of the world, and we covered a couple of the lists. This week I'd like to do the same thing, but I'd first like to start by covering Father's Day, as Father's Day just happened this past weekend, and just about, probably about the end of the Father's Day for me when I'm recording this. So I'd like to wish all fathers out there a happy Father's Day, and hopefully all fathers got good gifts and good company now that the COVID restrictions are starting to ease a little bit. At least got to see some family members and wish them a happy Father's Day. So, without further ado, let's get started. Our first topics are going to be on Father's Day, and then when we exhaust all of those, we'll probably switch over to the trivia about the seven wonders. I don't think there'll be that many for Father's Day, considering there's not too much about it. But again, we'll see how much we got. So, sit back, relax, and enjoy the show. So, we're going to talk about Father's Day first. And a lot of this info I got for Father's Day is off of readersdigest.ca. So, some of these will be American trivia facts, but it is by a Canadian. It does have some Canadian questions as well. So, first we're going to talk about is something I kind of touched on back when Mother's Day rolled around. And that from its inception, Father's Day has played second fiddle to Mother's Day. It started in Spokane, Washington, when a resident, Sonora Dodd, conceived the holiday in the early 1900s. But it wasn't made official until President Richard Nixon made it official when? Was made official in 1972, 58 years after its maternal equivalent. So, Father's Day has always been second to Mother's Day. The next is, there's a certain company that loves Father's Day. This company has focused Father's Day themed doodles on its main page since 2000. Three star dads sleeping in a hammock and four featured ties. Turns out it's Google. Google has always loved it. Everyone knows the doodles when they go on the Google main page. You know, they might show up instead of just a regular Google sign. It'll have Google with some interesting doodle. And apparently, Google has had these doodles for Father's Day since the year 2000. Really early in its life. This next one puts into perspective how many fathers there are. How many total number of fathers are there in Canada, according to Stats Canada? This includes biological, adoptive, and stepfathers. Turns out there's about 8.6 million fathers in this country. And hopefully people wish these 8.6 million a happy Father's Day. This next one is probably one that won't surprise many people, as I'm sure we've all heard our fathers say this before. A 2010 poll showed that 80% of Canadian fathers simply wanted what for Father's Day? Apparently it says that Canadian fathers simply wanted quality time with their families for Father's Day. A similar American poll also outlined that gifts fathers wanted absolutely no part in are ties, world's best dad tees, mugs, dress shirts, and homemade crafts. So if anything else, at least give your father some quality time. I'm sure they'll be happy with that. The next one. Now, the next one is an interesting one. According to this fact that I can find limited stuff on, however, it does seem to be semi-true at least, the only surviving son of Sir John A. Macdonald did not make his father super proud by some of his decisions. What did he do that did not make his father super happy? It turns out that against his father's wishes, he took part in the Wolseley expedition. Now, this is pretty interesting as he kind of went against what his father wanted and went on the Wolseley expedition. However, eventually he was part of his father's law firm and then became a conservative MP from Winnipeg. And then he also briefly served as a minister of the Tupper cabinet in 1896. And also, I believe for a short time, he was the premier of Manitoba, but very briefly. It's a pretty interesting fact, if you ask me. So John A. Macdonald may not have always had such a great relationship with his son, but yet he was a great father to our great country. But even that is not such a true fact, given all the atrocities he committed. The next one is pretty interesting. Now, this one involves Canada's national symbol. Now, the national symbol or the national animal. What is this animal? Turns out it's the beaver. And it is one of the only, it's one of the few male creatures in the animal kingdom that sticks around after mating to help raise the kids, or the children, the baby beavers. And in rare cases, biologists even have seen male beavers taking on the role of a single dad. It's good to know us humans aren't the only ones. The next trivia fact might make a lot of fathers want to go visit this place on Father's Day, as I'm sure a lot of fathers would love to enjoy this drink while they're there. In this country, Father's Day is celebrated in a different way. It's called Mannertag. It's celebrated 40 days after Easter, and is this country's twist on Father's Day. Instead of breakfast in bed, in some parts of the country, men pile wagons high with beer and set off a long, boozy jaunts through town. What country does this? This is Germany. So in Germany, apparently they do these long jaunts with beer down the center of cities. Kind of sounds like a lot of fun and would be something to see, I'm sure. This next one is not necessarily that big of a surprise, but I'm sure that it could have already been guessed. In the United States last year, or at least when this fact was written, Hallmark sold 141 million cards for Mother's Day, but how many for Father's Day? Only about 93 million. So Mother's Day is a much more popular holiday for cards than Father's Day. This next one is probably a big surprise to some. This one, it talks about stay-at-home dads. The number of Canadian stay-at-home dads has tripled in the last 25 years. Today, there is a certain percentage of the country's two-parent families see the dad changing the diapers and the mom at work. What is the percentage of the country's two-parent families that see the dad taking on a bigger role as a stay-at-home dad? It's about 12%. So about 12% of the country's two-parent families see the dad doing more work at home while the mom goes to work. The next one is that Canadian women are more likely than their male counterparts to buy a gift on Father's Day. Or sorry, a gift for Father's Day. But men are more likely to buy something more expensive. Most generous of all are fellows in the Atlantic provinces who spend an average of how much? Apparently in the Atlantic provinces, they spend as much as $106. That's about it for the Father's Day facts for today. No, it's not a lot, but I thought we'd just talk about a few of them while we had the chance. Next, I think we're going to go into a little bit more into the seven wonders of the world. We'll talk about a few different lists and maybe start covering the real seven wonders of the world. Before we do, I'd like to play a quick song that I will dedicate to Father's Day and all the fathers. So, I'll be back with you in a second and I'll introduce the song. The song I found to dedicate for all the fathers for Father's Day is one involving a father who wrote a song to parallel looking in the eyes of his son, who died at a young age of 4, and the eyes of his fathers, who he never met. This heartbreaking song shows the singer longing for the experience of a father-son father-song relationship. What it reached number 2 on the adult contemporary charts in 1998. What is the song and who is it sung by? It's Eric Clapton's My Father's Eyes here on CILU 102.7 FM.
That's when I need my father's eyes. I'm like a bridge that is washed away. My foundations were made of clay. As my soul slides down to die, how could I lose him? What did I try? Bit by bit, I realized that he was here with me. I looked into my heart.
Welcome back. You are listening to CILU 102.7 FM. You're listening to It's Pretty Trivial. That was Eric Clapton with My Father's Eyes. Now that we've talked about Father's Day and listened to our first song, I think it's time to move into our second part where we talk about the new seven wonders of the world. Now, I kind of started talking a little bit about this last episode, where I talked kind of about some different lists. But now we are going to talk about the actual seven wonders of the world. The list is called the New Seven Wonders of the World. And it's the list that everyone talks about when you hear the seven wonders of the world. Till recently, I didn't even realize myself that there was multiple lists. In what year was this first launched to find the wonders of the world? Turns out in 2000, a Swiss foundation launched a campaign to determine the new seven wonders of the world. Given that the original seven wonders of the world list was compiled in the 2nd century BCE, and only one entrant is still standing, which is what? Covered in the last episode, it's the Pyramids of Giza. Seemed like time for an update. Again, I'm getting some of this information from Encyclopedia Britannica, and I'm sure a few others as well. People around the world agreed, as more than 100 million votes were cast on the internet or by text message. Final results, which were announced in 2007, were met with cheers as well as some jeers. A number of prominent contenders, such as the Athens Acropolis, failed to make the cut. Now, these new seven wonders are the seven wonders of the world. These seven wonders include the likes of what? Well, it turns out that they include the works of the Great Wall of China, Chichen Itza, Petra, Machu Picchu, Christ the Redeemer, the Colosseum, and the Taj Mahal, which hopefully I will cover in depth in this episode and possibly, if I don't have time, in the next episode. I think it's best to go with the last one and work our way to the top one. So, what we are going to start with is the bottom of the list, which is the Taj Mahal. Yes. I believe it's the Taj Mahal, at least. But either way, whether it is or it isn't, we're going to start with that one. It's probably one that is quite easy to do, and maybe we'll talk about Petra next. We might as well start somewhere. So we are going to start with the Taj Mahal. Now, I'm sure many people have heard of this very famous structure located in the banks of the Yumahan River. It is located in the Yamuna River, and it is in a vast Mughal garden that encompasses nearly 17 hectares in the Agra district in Uttar Pradesh. Now, this is located in which country? This is located in India. It's an immense mausoleum of white marble built in Agra between 1631 and 1648 by the order of the Mughal Emperor Shah Jahan in memory of his favorite wife. The Taj Mahal is a jewel of Muslim art in India and is one of the universally admired masterpieces of world heritage. A lot of what I'm getting right now is from the UNESCO website, which is kind of the International World Heritage Site Foundations. This is a very beautiful structure. Its construction started in 1632 and was completed in 1648. With the mosque, the guest house, and the main gateway on the south, the outer courtyard and its cloisters were added subsequently and completed in 1653. The existence of several historical and Quranic inscriptions in Arabic script have facilitated setting the chronology of Taj Mahal. For the construction, masons, stonecutters, inlayers, carvers, painters, calligraphers, dome builders, and other artisans were requisitioned from the whole of the empire, and also from Central Asia and Iran. Ustad Ahmed Lahori was the main architect of the Taj Mahal. Taj Mahal is considered to be the greatest architectural achievement of the whole range of what area? The whole range of Indo-Islamic architecture. Its recognized architectonic beauty has a rhythmic combination of solids and voids, concave and convex, and light shadow, arches, domes that further increase the aesthetic aspect. Color combination of lush green with reddish pathways and blue sky over it showcases the monument in ever-changing tints and moods. The relief work in marble and inlay with precious and semi-precious stones make it a monument apart. It is truly a remarkable structure. It lies in some truly remarkable innovations carried out by horticulture planners and architects of Shah Jahan. One such genius planning is the placing of the tomb at one end of the quadripartite garden rather than in the exact center, which adds rich depth and perspective to the distant view of the monument. Now, the tomb is further raised on a square platform with the four sides of the octagonal base of the minarets extended beyond the square at the corners. The top of the platform is reached through a lateral flight of steps provided in the center of the southern side. The ground plan of the Taj Mahal is in perfect balance of composition. the octagonal tomb chamber in the center, encompassed by the portal halls and the four corner rooms. It's repeated on the upper floor. The exterior of the tomb is square in plan, with chaffered corners. The large double-story domed chamber, which houses the cenotaphs of Mumtaz Mahal and Shah Jahan, is a perfect octagon in plan. The exquisite octagonal marble lattice screen encircling both cenotaphs is a piece of superb workmanship. It is a beautiful structure. I can't even start to explain how beautiful this structure is. Now, it is so important for the protection of it that an area of 10,400 square kilometers around the Taj Mahal is defined to protect the monument from pollution. The Supreme Court of India in December 1996 delivered a ruling banning the use of coal coke in industries located in the Taj Trapezium zone and switching over to natural gas or relocating them outside this zone. It's comprised of 40 protected monuments, including three World Heritage Sites, Taj Mahal, Agra Fort, and Fatehpur Sikri. That covers basically the Taj Mahal. Before we cover the others, we're going to listen to a quick break from our sponsors. When we come back, we'll get into some other interesting monuments. You're listening to CILU 102.7 FM.
CILU is sponsored in part by the students of Lakehead University, our listeners, and our sponsors. At this time, we would like to thank the following sponsors for their continuous support.
Lakehead Unitarian Fellowship, an inclusive spiritual community promoting a compassionate, just, and sustainable world. Find them online at luf.ca, on Facebook, or at 129 South Algoma, Sundays at 10:30 a.m. Live from the Rock Folk Festival, bringing the spirit of folk and folk music to Red Rock every August. Keep up to date with upcoming happenings and buy tickets online at livefromtherockfolkfestival.com. The Outpost, Lakehead University's pub, full-service restaurant, and live music venue. Find them on Facebook to stay up to date on all the happenings during the school year, like Tanker Tuesdays and Pub Night Thursdays.
Welcome back. You are listening to CILU 102.7 FM. If you're just tuning in, thank you for tuning in to It's Pretty Trivial here on this Tuesday morning. If you were listening to us before, welcome back. In the first half of the show, we were talking about Father's Day and started talking about the seven wonders of the world, starting with the Taj Mahal. If you're just coming back after the break, thank you for listening. Just a quick reminder, don't forget to follow us on social media. Just look us up. I'm sure you'll find us. It's Pretty Trivial. Without further ado, let's get back to some trivia. Before the break, we were talking about the first seven wonder of the world. We started by talking about the Taj Mahal in Agra, India. The next, which we are going to talk about, is Petra. Now, Petra is not one that I have personally heard about, but I'm sure some people may know about it. Again, I will get my info from the UNESCO website, as again, this is probably one of the best resources out there, as it is a kind of an international heritage site protection in from the United Nations. Now, Petra is somewhere that's been inhabited since prehistoric times. The Nabataean caravan city, situated between the Red Sea and the Dead Sea, was an important crossroads between Arabia, Egypt, and Syria, Phoenicia. Petra is half built, half carved into the rock, and surrounded by mountains riddled with passages and gorges. It's one of the world's most fabulous archaeological sites, where ancient Eastern traditions blends with Hellenistic architecture. What country is this from? This is in the country of Georgia. Or sorry, not Georgia, Jordan. It's in Jordan. And it became a Hellenistic and Roman times. During those times, the Roman times and Hellenistic times, a major caravan center for the incense of Arabia, the silks of China and the spices of India, a crossroads between different places. It's surrounded by mountains, riddled with passages and gorges. An ingenious water management system allowed extensive settlement of an essentially arid area during the Nabataean, Roman, and Byzantine periods. It is one of the world's richest and largest archaeological sites set in the dominating red sandstone landscape. The outstanding universal value of Petra resides in the vast extent of elaborate tomb and temple architecture, religious high places, the remnant channels, tunnels, and diversion dams that combined with a vast network of cisterns and reservoirs which controlled and conserved seasonal rains, and the extensive archaeological remains, including of copper mines, temples, churches, and other public buildings. This is truly a fascinating place. The varied architecture remains and architectural monuments from prehistoric times to medieval periods bear exceptional testimony to the now lost civilizations which succeeded each other at the site. This is truly an outstanding place. This is somewhere I definitely have not heard of before doing the research for this, but definitely somewhere I want to visit. I have not found much more than basically it's a underground, semi-underground place. So I'm sorry I can only briefly cover it. But it truly sounds like an amazing place to visit. And I'm sure many others would love to visit it as well. Now that is Petra. The next one I'd like to cover is the Colosseum. This is another very famous structure that I'm sure many have heard of. This, I'm sure many people could name off where it's from and where it can be found. So, I might do a little bit more about this one than other ones, as this one has a lot more history to it. The Colosseum also goes by another name. It also goes by the Flavian Amphitheater. Giant amphitheater built in Rome under the Flavian emperors. Now, the Colosseum is located in a very famous city. Where is this? Well, this city is Rome, Italy. The construction was begun sometime between which dates? During the reign of which emperor? It was built sometime between 70 and 72 CE. During the reign of Vespasian. It's located just east of the Palatine Hill on the grounds of what was Nero's golden house. The artificial lake that was the centerpiece of the palace complex was drained and the Colosseum was seated there. A decision that was as much symbolic as it was practical. Vespasian, whose path to the throne had relatively humble beginnings, chose to replace the tyrannical empire's private lake with a public amphitheater that could host tens of thousands of Romans. It was officially dedicated in 80 CE by Titus in a ceremony that included 100 days of games. Later, in 82 CE, Domitian completed the work by adding the uppermost story. Unlike earlier amphitheaters, which were nearly all dug into convenient hillsides for extra support, the Colosseum is a freestanding structure of stone and concrete, using complex system of barrel vaults and groin vaults and measuring what dimensions. Measures 620 by 513 feet, or 189 by 156 meters overall. Three of the arena's stories are encircled by arcades framed on the exterior by engaged columns in the Doric, Ionic, and Corinthian orders. The structure's rising arrangement of columns became the basis of the Renaissance codification known as the Assemblage of Orders. The main structural framework and facade are travertine, the secondary walls are Vulcania tufa, and the inner bowl and the arcade vaults are concrete. Just such a massive concrete structure. It seated how many spectators? Seated some 50,000 spectators who were shielded from the sun by massive retractable velarium, or awning, supporting mass extended from corbels built into the Colosseum's top or attic story, and hundreds of Roman sailors were required to manipulate the rigging that extended and retracted the velarium. This Colosseum was the scene of thousands of hand-to-hand combats between gladiators, of contests between men and animal, and of many larger combats, including mock naval engagements. However, it is uncertain whether the arena was the site of the martyrdom of early Christians. It was damaged by lightning and earthquakes in medieval times, and, even more severely, by vandalism. All the marble seats and decorative materials disappeared, and the site was treated as little more than a quarry for more than 1,000 years. Preservation of it began in the earnest of the 19th century, with notable efforts led by who? Led by Pius VIII, and a restoration project was undertaken in the 90s. It's long been one of Rome's major tourist attractions, receiving close to 7 million visitors annually. Changing exhibitions relating to the culture of ancient Rome are regularly mounted. This is truly an amazing structure. And as much as it's not in the same condition it was when Roman gladiators fought there, it still exists, and it still is a marvel to the modern day. One day, I myself would love to go see the Colosseum. This is probably one of the wonders that I feel the most people will know about. However, it's something that I think requires a deep look. Such a beautiful structure. And amazing, some of the engineering. To think, for example, that they had an awning back in the 1st century CE is just amazing. The next one we are going to look at is a famous one in the sense that it's another type of pyramid that many probably don't know much about. This is Chichen Itza. This is a ancient Mayan city, occupying an area of about 4 square miles or 10 square kilometers in the south central state of what? In which country? It's the south central Yucatan state in Mexico. It's located some 90 miles or 150 kilometers east-northeast of Uxmal and 75 miles or 120 kilometers east-southeast of the modern city of Mérida. The only source of water in the arid region around the site is from wells, cenotes, formed by sinkholes in limestone formations. Two big cenotes on the site made it a suitable place for a city and gave it its name, from Chi, which means what, and Chen, which means what. Chi meaning mouths, and Chen meaning wells, and Itza, the name of the Mayan tribe that settled there, was first designated as a UNESCO World Heritage Site in 1988. The city was founded in what century? Was founded in about the 6th century CE, presumably by Mayan people of the Yucatan Peninsula, who occupied the region since the pre-classic or formative period, 1500 BCE to about 300 CE. The principal early buildings are in an architectural style known as Puuc, which shows the number of divergences from the style of the southern lowlands. The earliest structures are to the south of the main plaza and include Akabtiz, House of the Dark Writing, the Chinchachob, Red House, and Iglesia, Church. The Casa de las Monjas, Nunnery, and the observatory El Caracol, the snail. There's evidence that in the 10th century, after the collapse of the Mayan cities of the southern lowlands, Chichen was invaded by foreigners, probably Mayan speakers who had been strongly influenced by and perhaps under the direction of the Toltec of central Mexico. These invaders may have been the Itza, for whom the site was named. Some authorities, however, believe the Itza arrived 200 to 300 years later. In any event, the construction of such major buildings as El Castillo, the castle, a pyramid that rises 79 feet or 24 meters above the main plaza, it has four sides, each with 91 stairs and facing a cardinal direction, including the steps on the top platform, that combined a total of 365 steps, the number of days in a solar year. During the spring and autumn equinoxes, shadows cast by the setting sun give the appearance of a snake undulating down the stairway. A carving of a plumed serpent at the top of the pyramid is symbolic of the Quetzalcoatl, known in Mayan as the Kukulkan, one of the major deities of the ancient Mesoamerican pantheon. Excavations within the nine-platform pyramid revealed another earlier structure containing a red jaguar throne studded with jade. This is a truly remarkable structure. I don't know much about the Mayans myself, but just to think that no one really thinks about the civilizations that lived in North America before Europeans settled. And there's such a rich history, especially with the Mayans, living in this city. Chichen Itza is probably the only Mayan structure I've ever even heard or known about. So I think it's just really interesting and cool to think that such an interesting structure has so much history. We're going to take a quick musical break, and when we come back, we might cover one or two more famous Seven Wonders. And then we're going to leave the rest for the next episode, possibly with some other different types of info and different types of trivia. So, without further ado, let's introduce our song. The song we're about to play, it's a little bit of a stretch for what we were talking about, but I am going to play the song Centuries by Fall Out Boy. This song is kind of about like a David and Goliath story. And kind of it's a song that wants to empower people who are a little weird. The music video for this faces a very gladiatorial theme. And I think with talking about the Colosseum and what happened there and thinking of a David and Goliath story, I think it's perfect. So here is Fall Out Boy's Centuries here on CILU 102.7 FM.
Some legends are told, some turn to dust or to gold, but you will remember me. Remember me for centuries. Just one mistake is all it will take. We'll go down in history. Remember me for centuries.
Welcome back. You are listening to CILU 102.7 FM. That was Fall Out Boy with Centuries. We're in the last few minutes of our show here, so we might cover one more, and then we'll cover the rest, the grand finale, next week. We'll only have two more, so next week we'll finish off the last few, and I'll have another theme as well. Maybe it'll be on famous places instead of just the Seven Wonders, but we'll see. Before we finish off, I'd just like to quickly cover one of the famous places that was kind of disappeared. I'm going to talk about Machu Picchu, which is in Peru. It's an Incan city of sparkling granite, precariously perched between two towering Andean peaks. It's thought by scholars to have been a sacred archaeological center for the nearby Incan capital of Cusco. Built in the peak of the Incan Empire in the mid-1400s, this mountain citadel was later abandoned by the Incas. It remained unknown except to locals until 1911, when it was rediscovered by archaeologist Hiram Bingham. The site can only be reached by foot, train, or helicopter. Most visitors visit by the train from nearby Cusco. I remember learning about this in, I believe, grade 5 in history class. It's a pretty beautiful place. There's a lot of really interesting things that the Incas would do. Like, I believe they had their agriculture built into the mountainside with really interesting irrigation and growing techniques. But it's really amazing to think that this city disappeared for years until it was finally rediscovered in 1911 and is now considered one of the 7 wonders of the world. That about does it for today's episode. Before we go, we're going to play one last song. This last song is a little bit of a different one. It's one that I'm picking less so for its relation to the 7 wonders and more so just because we're talking about locations. And this one references Northern Ontario, as in Thunder Bay and the Northern region. It's a song that I think is a little less known, and I'm not sure if it's this version's by the original artist, but I'm going to play The Little Black Flies by Guy Carawan. This song is a song about how bad the black flies here in Northern Ontario are. And it was a funny song, I believe, written in the 1950s when someone came to work up in, I believe, like the mines and building dams and basically helping build Northern Ontario. And it's a funny song I've heard many times, and I think it's a fun one to share. So, without further ado, here it is on CILU 102.7 FM. I'll see you next week.
'Twas early in the spring when I decided to go for to work up in the woods in North Ontario. And the unemployment officer, they'd send me through to the little Abitibi with the survey crew. And the black flies, the little black flies, always the black flies, no matter where you go. I'll die with the black flies pecking my bones in North Ontario, oh, in North Ontario. And Black Toby was the captain of the crew. He says, I'm gonna tell you boys what we're gonna do. They wanna build a power dam and we must find a way for to make the little lap flow around the other way. And the black flies, the little black flies, always the black flies, no matter where you go. I'll die with the black flies picking my bones in North Ontario, oh, in North Ontario. Survey to the east and we survey to the west. Tried to make our minds up how to do it best. Little lab, what can I do? I'm all but going crazy on the survey crew. And the black flies, the little black flies, always the black flies, no matter where you go. I'll die with the black flies pecking my bones in North Ontario, oh, in North Ontario. Black fly everywhere, crawling in your whiskers and crawling in your hair, swimming in the soup and swimming in the tea. The devil take the black fly and let me be. Oh, the black flies, the little black flies, always the black flies, no matter where you go. I'll die with the black flies picking my bones in North Ontario, oh, in North Ontario. Black Toby fell to swearing cause the work were going slow. The state of our morale was getting pretty low. The flies swarmed heavy as you staggered up the trail, staggering up and down the trail, choking half to death. And the black flies, the little black flies. Always the black flies, no matter where you go. I'll die with the black flies picking my bones in North Ontario Isle, in North Ontario Isle. Now the bull cook's name was Blind River Joe. If it hadn't been for him, we'd have never pulled through. He bound up our bruises and he kidded us for fun. Lathered us with bacon grease and balsam gum. And the black flies, the little black flies, always the black flies, no matter where you go. I'll die with the black flies picking my bones in North Ontario, oh, in North Ontario. At last the job was over, Black Toby says we're through with the little Abitibi and the survey crew. 'Twas a wonderful experience, but this I know, I'll never go again to North Ontario. And the black flies, the little black flies, always the black flies, no matter where you go. I'll die with the black flies picking my bones in North Ontario, oh, in North Ontario.
As the COVID-19 pandemic continues to spread, it is important to stay safe. Coronavirus is now in Canadian provinces and territories. By law, if you have traveled abroad recently, you must self-isolate. To do your part, stay home as much as possible and practice social distancing. Try to maintain at least 2 meters away from others. Encourage those who are sick or showing symptoms to self-isolate or to seek medical attention. As always, wash your hands frequently, avoid touching your face, and practice good respiratory etiquette by covering your coughs and sneezes. Clean regularly used surfaces. COVID-19 symptoms can mimic colds and flu and include fever, cough, and difficulty breathing. Infected individuals may also have mild symptoms or none at all. For up-to-date information, check reliable sources like your local health authority or the Public Health Agency of Canada.
CILU is sponsored in part by the students of Lakehead University, our listeners, and our sponsors. At this time, we would like to thank the following sponsors for their continuous support.
The Thunder Bay Country Market, keeping it local every Saturday from 8 a.m. to 1 p.m. and every Wednesday from 3:30 to 6:30 p.m. year-round. Stop by and say hi to over 80 vendors who make it, bake it, and grow it in the Dove Building located on the CLE grounds. Sensia Corporate Web Solutions. Log on to sensia.ca for information about locally owned and operated hosting, site creation, and more. The Study Coffee House. The Study is a fully licensed, intimate live venue and the place to get your caffeine fix while on the Lakehead University campus.
CILU now presents Indie Beat.
Thanks for joining me for Indie Beat. I'm Mae Wandinger. Jerrica Alyssa is a pop R&B and soul singer-songwriter based in Vancouver and Nashville, as well as a professional Polynesian dancer. She was the winner of Variety's Got Talent, going on to appear on the Variety Show of Hearts Telethon. I'll be featuring Jerrica Alyssa in half an hour. First, here's The Big Coast with Wildfire.
She stopped my heart up like a wildfire. Took a bullet to my heart to wake me up to this liar. Things are moving slowly, then they speed up. I lose control. Am I starting to believe in second chances? Do you as well? You and I tonight. From a momentary spark in wildfire.
tonight. Someone, she reminds me of someone.